Hi, and welcome to the magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Rick Gray. Today I'll be reading from the March edition of Remind magazine. The theme of this month's magazine is miniseries, especially back in the 1970s. The article we're about to read is Where Are They Now? Life after ruling the miniseries world was fabulous for these stars. The first is Robert Duvall. By then already well known for his roles in The Godfather series and Apocalypse Now, Robert Duvall headlined the wildly successful Lonesome Dove as one of two former Texas Rangers who led a cattle drive to Montana in the 1870s. Duvall then continued his steady upward trajectory in the Hollywood industry, acting in countless blockbusters such as Gone in 60 Seconds, Secondhand Lions, The Road, and Crazy Heart. Most recently, he was in the 2022 Netflix horror film, The Pale Blue Eye. He currently lives on a 300-acre horse farm in Northern Virginia with his wife, Luciana Pedraza, not a far leap from his Texas Ranger days. Next is Richard Chamberlain. Painting was always one of his first loves, and after Richard Chamberlain, now 89, moved on from TV, film, Broadway, and dominating the miniseries genre, as well as penning his memoirs, Shattered Love in 2003, he returned to his canvases and his artwork as part of the Celebrities Gallery on the Hawaiian island of Maui. In 2022, he made headlines for auctioning off his most prized possessions in a sale titled Property from the Life and Career of Richard Chamberlain. He shared with Fox News, "Life is really nice. I'm sort of retired and can live a much simpler life than when I was working. I can now sit around and watch TV if I want to, go to the movies, have dinner with friends, and just have fun. It's very gratifying." He resides in Los Angeles. Next is Rachel Ward. England-born Rachel Ward hit it big after the success of the miniseries The Thornbirds, although by then she'd already found some acclaim in the 1981 Burt Reynolds thriller Sharky's Machine. After starring in the likes of Against All Odds and Wide Sargasso Sea, Ward earned a 2001 Golden Globe nomination for her role in the miniseries On the Beach. Since 2000, she has turned increasingly to life behind the camera, recently co-writing and directing 2019 dramedy Palm Beach, which starred her husband, Brian Brown. And next is LeVar Burton. Almost 40 years after his breakout, Emmy-nominated performance as Kunta Kinte in the 1977 miniseries Roots, LeVar Burton also received an Emmy nod as an executive director of History's 2016 Roots remake. In between those projects, of course, the actor became even more famous, thanks to a couple of dramatically different TV series. He served as the beloved host of PBS educational series Reading Rainbow from 1983 to 2006 and portrayed fan favorite Star Trek The Next Generation character Geordi LaForge during the series' small screen run from 1987 to 1994. In four subsequent feature films between 1994 and 2002, and in the final season of Star Trek, Picard, last year. Burton has also done a lot of directing, most recently a 2023 episode of NCIS Hawaii. You can keep up more with Burton at his Instagram. And following up on the Roots theme, the next article by Jeff Pfeiffer is entitled 8 Things You Didn't Know About Roots. When the word miniseries is mentioned, at or near the top of famous titles that come to the minds of many people of a certain age, and maybe even some younger folks, is 1977's Roots, based on Alex Haley's best-selling work, Faction. Airing on ABC over 8 consecutive nights in January of that year, it featured an incredible cast of established, recent, and soon-to-be stars, as it unfolded a gripping, often tragic story that needed to be told and heard. While Roots is one of those far-reaching classics where a person might know a lot about it even without having seen it, there are several fascinating elements behind its production and its impact that even those who have watched and enjoyed it may not have been aware of. Here are eight of them. Number one, Roots was the first show of any type to receive at least 20 major Emmy nominations, and the first to be nominated for every Emmy acting category. Adding in the Creative Arts Emmy nods it received, Roots earned 37 total nominations, which is still a record among limited series. It ended up winning 9. Number 2. The 7-part sequel miniseries Roots: The Next Generations aired on ABC from February 18th to 24th, 1979, and traced the lives of Kunta Kinte's descendants from 1882 to 1967. As such, the only actors who reprised their roles from the original series were George Stanford Brown as Tom Harvey and Lynn Moody as Irene Harvey. Number 3. On the list of the all-time most watched broadcasts in U.S. television history, the final episode of Roots that aired January 30, 1977, is tied with the 1983 TV movie The Day After at number 17. Excluding Super Bowls and news coverage, and just factoring in primetime scripted programming, those titles are tied at number 2 behind the 1983 final episode of MASH. Number 4. LeVar Burton and Louis Gossett Jr. reprised their respective roles as Kunta Kinte and Fiddler in the 1988 TV movie Roots: The Gift, which aired December 11, 1988 on ABC. The film story took place between the events of the second and third episodes of Roots and was set during Christmas time, 1775. Number 5. While she earned an Emmy nomination for portraying Missy Ann Reynolds, a slave owner, star Sandy Duncan did not realize how villainous her character would end up being when she first read for the part. In fact, Duncan was so turned off that in the 2016 interview with Today, she revealed that she still had not been able to watch the miniseries. Number 6. A couple of young future sitcom stars had early appearances in Roots. Todd Bridges, who would co-star in Different Strokes beginning later the following year, appeared as Bud Harvey. Tracy Gold, who would co-star in Growing Pains, started in 1985, played the young version of Duncan's character, Missy Ann Reynolds. Number 7. Taj Abdul-Samad, who portrayed Baby Kunta Kinte, grew up to form the successful 1980s group The Boys, with his two older brothers and his younger brother. The Boys had 2 number one hits on the U.S. Hot R&B chart in the late 80s, Dial My Heart and Lucky Charm, and they hit number one on that chart again in 1990 with Crazy. Known as Sons of Light since 1999, the group is still together, though they have not released an album since their third one in 1992. And number 8, no one knew just how popular and huge a cultural phenomenon Roots was going to be. Co-star John Amos, who earned an Emmy nomination as the older Kunta Kinte, told Mashable in 2016 about how he knew it was reaching large audiences. "When I found out we had just about closed the casinos in Vegas, that's when it hit home just what kind of impact the show was having. Because nothing stops the casinos in Vegas." The next article is about classic TV, the influential women of TV comedy. They were wholesome, they were hilarious, and they were the pioneers of comedy. From Lucy to Carol to Mary Tyler Moore, Catchy Comedy has all your favorite leading ladies of the 20th century airing every day of the week, just about all day long. Starting with one of the most beloved family-friendly sitcoms of all time, The Donna Reed Show, airing every weekday at 9:30 a.m. ET, you can watch quintessential 1950s housewife Donna Stone as she navigates family life with her doctor husband, played by Paul Peterson, and their two teenage children. At a time when most sitcoms centered around the patriarch of the family, Donna Reed's portrayal of a strong woman who was also a loving homemaker and mother not only won over an entire generation of viewers, but it also set the tone for dozens of family sitcoms to come. Ranked by TV Guide magazine as the number 17 greatest show of all time, the groundbreaking variety show, The Carol Burnett Show, weekdays at 10 a.m., single-handedly brought women to variety TV. It was the first of its kind, the inaugural variety show to employ a female host, TV veteran Carol Burnett, and featured supporting cast members Harvey Korman, Tim Conway, and Vicki Lawrence. Her spinoff, Mama's Family, airs weekly at 3 p.m. But the brilliant, quirky, ear-tugging phenomenon Burnett was what made the show a hit. It was nominated for Emmys nearly every year it aired from 1967 to 1978. And we can't forget the lovable, quirky Lucille Ball. Ball's semi-autographical comedy hit, I Love Lucy, weekdays at noon, which she made with real-life husband Desi Arnaz and her post-Desi Arnaz sitcom, The Lucy Show, at 11 a.m., cemented the comedian as one of the best comics of all time. Ball gave female viewers a relatable, yet completely laughable, idea of what life would look like for a widow raising her children with her roommate, a divorcee named Vivian Vance. No list of influential women in comedy could be complete without Mary Tyler Moore, who ushered in the fashionable 70s with her hit sitcom, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, weekdays at 1 p.m. The series followed the beloved feminist icon and independent career woman, Mary Richards, played by Moore, and spawned spinoff Rhoda, which plays weekdays at 1:30 p.m., featuring Valerie Harper as Richards' spunky, chic friend who moves to Manhattan to find love and a fulfilling artistic career. Milwaukee can thank Happy Days and its spinoff Laverne and Shirley, which follows two best friends, the dynamic duo Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams, navigating single life in the 50s Milwaukee and the 60s Burbank, weekdays at 2 p.m., for putting it on the TV map. You can't go wrong turning on catchy comedy. Now let's look at some TV miniseries from the 1950s. First was For Whom the Bell Tolls. Playhouse 90 was a drama anthology series that aired on CBS from 1956 to 1960 and consisted of weekly 90-minute episodes performed by some of the biggest stars of the stage and screen. In March 1959, Playhouse 90 adapted the 1940 Ernest Hemingway novel For Whom the Bell Tolls into a two-part, three-hour TV presentation. John Frankenheimer, who would go on to direct film classics like The Manchurian Candidate and Grand Prix, directed the episodes. The cast featured Jason Robards, Maria Schell, Maureen Stapleton, Nehemiah Persoff, Eli Wallach, Sidney Pollack, and Nicholas Colasanto, who was coach on Cheers. Economic pressures led to the decline of anthologies in the late 50s and the early 60s, but For Whom the Bell Tolls was an early model for the epic TV miniseries to come in the 70s and 80s. Miniseries invade British TV. As more households adopted television through the 1950s, the British adapted the classic radio serial tradition for the new medium. In 1951, the BBC broadcast a live performance of The Warden, based on the 1855 novel by Anthony Trollope, over six episodes. Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice and Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre received similar TV treatments. The subject matter took a sharp turn in 1953 when the BBC broadcast The Quartermass Experiment, a six-episode sci-fi drama created specifically for television. The show imagined a near future in which the first human space travelers returned to Earth with a potentially deadly alien species. Two Quartermass sequel miniseries followed in 1955 and 58. Mr. Lincoln, Omnibus, was an educational anthology series that presented short documentaries, TV plays, and segments on arts and culture. Beginning in November 1952 and continuing through February 1953, Omnibus aired the five-part biographical drama Mr. Lincoln, written by author James Agee and starring Royal Dano as Abraham Lincoln and Joanne Woodward as Anne Rutledge, allegedly Lincoln's first love. In 1981, ABC tried to revive Omnibus with a handful of sporadically scheduled specials. However, the show failed to develop an audience. Next, Daniel Boone. Airing in four parts over 1960 and 1961, was the Walt Disney Western drama Daniel Boone, based loosely on the life of American pioneer and folk hero Daniel Boone, played by Dewey Martin. Boone was a Revolutionary War veteran famous for his exploration into Kentucky, which was at the time beyond the borders of the 13 colonies, and the time he spent with the Shawnee tribe, which was described in a book published in 1784. 3 years after the miniseries, a TV series of the same name, starring Fess Parker, premiered on NBC and aired for six seasons. Next, A Farewell to Arms. Book adaptations were all the rage in 1960s Britain. In 1966, a television adaptation of Ernest Hemingway's 1929 war novel about an American medic serving in the Italian army and his love affair with an English nurse aired over three consecutive weeks and starred Vanessa Redgrave, George Hamilton, and Susan Engel. Although the show was well received, all three episodes were later wiped and are now lost to history. Luckily, there are several other on-screen adaptations of this tragic love story, including a 1932 film starring Gary Cooper and a 1957 film starring Rock Hudson. Next, Persuasion. Jane Austen's novels have been adapted into countless films and TV series over the years. In the 1960s, the on-screen depiction of the posthumously published 1818 romance drama Persuasion was also a four-part British miniseries that began airing on December 30, 1960 and ended on January 20, 1961, following a young woman named Anna Elliot, played by English actress Daphne Slater, who re-encounters a naval captain 8 years after breaking off their engagement. Now, back to the 1970s. First, let's look at miniseries Pearl. Relive the final days of Pearl Harbor, ABC's promo for this three-night 1978 event starring Angie Dickinson, Dennis Weaver, Robert Wagner, and Leslie Ann Warren promised. With action scenes lifted directly from the 1970 war film Tora, 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 Oscar-winning screenwriter Sterling Siliphant's Pearl had a true cinematic feel as the intimate personal drama played out before, during, and after the 1941 bombing, including the star-crossed love of a first-generation Japanese-American reporter, Tiana Alexandra, and a Navy lieutenant, Greg Henry. An estimated 80 million people tuned in for the stirring story. The Scarlet Letter. In 1979, PBS aired the four-part miniseries The Scarlet Letter, based on Nathaniel Hawthorne's 1850 novel that you likely read in high school. The iconic work of fiction and its on-screen counterpart followed young Puritan Hester Prynne, played by Meg Foster, who was shunned by her community after committing adultery in 17th century Massachusetts. She is forced to wear an A on the front of her dress, which is maybe the rating you'd give this drama if you're really into literary classics. Next up, From Here to Eternity. An extravaganza of lust is how one critic referred to NBC's 6-hour adaptation of James Jones' Pearl Harbor novel in 1979, with Natalie Wood and William Devane in the steamy, adulterous roles made famous by Deborah Carr and Burt Lancaster in the Oscar-winning 1953 film. Steve Railsback earned rave reviews as the ill-fated Private Pruitt, who's punished for not boxing on his unit's team and takes refuge with a prostitute played by newcomer Kim Basinger. Other memorable turns come from Joe Pantoliano as the hapless, tragic Private Maggio and Peter Boyle as the sadistic Sergeant Fatso Judson. A spinoff From Here to Eternity series ran for one season in 1980. Next, Edward and Mrs. Simpson. Edward and Mrs. Simpson was a real-life tale made for television dramatization, a story about the scandalous relationship between England's Prince of Wales, played by Edward Fox, later to become King Edward VIII, and a married American woman named Wallis Simpson, played by Cynthia Harris. The British program, first broadcast in 1978, earned a 1980 Emmy Award for Outstanding Limited Series, and for good reason. 7 episodes chronicled the duo's fast and furious love affair as a prince became a king, a socialite, divorced and remarried, and a nation watched the scandal unfold rapturously in front of its eyes. Next, 1980s miniseries. First is Kennedy. Miniseries and films depicting the unlucky political family were all the rage in the 1980s and 90s. One of many biographical dramas about the Kennedys was this 1983 portrayal starring Martin Sheen as John F. Kennedy, John Shea as Robert F. Kennedy, Kevin Conroy as Ted Kennedy, and Geraldine Fitzgerald as Rose Kennedy. The 7-episode series centered around many historical events, like the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis, as well as the private lives of the Kennedys. Next, Oppenheimer. Before the massive 2023 blockbuster, there was this 1980 miniseries about the American physicist who led the U.S. atomic bomb effort, J. Robert Oppenheimer. Featuring future Law & Order star Sam Waterston, this 7-episode BBC series was nominated for 2 Primetime Emmys and a Golden Globe. A Little Princess, based on the 1905 novel by Frances Hodgson Burnett, this 6-part British import followed the daughter of a wealthy aristocrat who, after spending her entire life living in India, is sent to an elite boarding school in London by her father, who dies shortly thereafter, believing himself to be penniless. Sarah, played by Amelia Shankly, is then turned into a servant at the school by the evil Miss Minchin, played by Maureen Lipman, and sent to live in the attic. But with the help of her father's friend and business partner, some better luck eventually catches up with her. Now, 1990s miniseries. First is The Stand. One of the most well-received Stephen King novels and 1994 miniseries adaptation is the apocalyptic dystopia The Stand, which was also turned into a less successful miniseries in 2020, perhaps because apocalyptic dystopias have become such a popular trope in recent years. But before The Last of Us, 12 Monkeys, and The Walking Dead, and its countless spin-offs, this tragic tale of a worldwide pandemic that kills off most of the globe population starred Gary Sinise, Rob Lowe, Ed Harris, and Molly Ringwald as some of the remaining survivors and followed them as they split into two groups who face each other in a final battle of good versus evil. Next, The Langoliers. Stephen King adaptations into miniseries were all the rage in the 1990s. Between Storm of the Century, The Tommyknockers, It, and The Shining, not to mention the long list of TV and feature films that were also adapted from his stories, you could hardly get away from King's domination of the horror genre during this decade. The Langoliers was not as popular as some of the others, but was probably the oddest. Based on a novella, the story follows 10 passengers who wake up on a flight from Los Angeles to Boston to find everyone else has vanished, including most of the crew, other than the pilot, which is convenient. After landing the plane, they also don't find anyone left at the airport or in its vicinity, and a mysterious creature begins hunting them down. Somehow, they end up finding their way back to reality, but only after several survivors have died, including a blind girl. Next, In Cold Blood. Nominated for 2 Primetime Emmys, this 1996 adaptation of Truman Capote's best-selling true crime book starred Anthony Edwards and Eric Roberts as 2 ex-cons who murdered a respected Kansas rancher and his family in the 1950s after unsuccessfully searching their property for a large sum of cash. The story in both the book and the film was inspired by a series of interviews Capote had with the murderers before they were executed for their crimes. And we'll close with a reader submission, The Life of a Celebrity Escort, which was mailed in by Chris Guida of Woodridge, New Jersey. While growing up in the late 1970s and 80s in Horsham, Pennsylvania, I always knew when my favorite shows were on and couldn't wait to tune in. Like so many, I entered this magical world and also loved seeing the stars on red carpets and at award shows. Never in my wildest dreams could I have imagined not only meeting many of these celebrities, but also working with them on over 130 award shows, including the Oscars, Emmys, Grammys, Golden Globes, TV Land Awards, Daytime Emmys, Country Music Association Awards, etc. In 1999, I had the unique opportunity of being asked to be a celebrity escort at the VH1 Divas live show. I had no idea what a celebrity escort was and was very skeptical as I didn't want to do anything seedy, but I was assured that it was a legitimate job and at every award show. That person was right. I was responsible for taking care of an A-list celebrity all night from the red carpet to getting them to the after party. The job is like a publicist, best friend, and security guard rolled into one. On all these award shows, the producers have too many celebrities to keep track of, and that is where the celebrity escort comes in. This award show led to another, then another. I worked for them for over 13 years. I was not only able to meet many of my favorite celebrities, but also spend hours with them. At first, I was too scared to say much, but over time, I treated them as normal people, and we shared stories, laughs, and drinks together. Over the years, my friends and family constantly asked me about my experiences and what so-and-so was like. If they were curious and interested, I bet others would be as well. So, I decided to write a book about all of my adventures. In 2001, Arm Candy, A Celebrity Escort's Tales from the Red Carpet, was released and became a bestseller on Amazon. It's a positive, fun book about what I really thought and felt during the years of this incredible job. I was able to work with so many incredible stars, but also to meet so many others. That's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading the March edition of Remind Magazine. I'm Rick Gray. So long until next time.